is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Monday is a scouting practice, and we go through things, and now we're getting ready to play opponent on Tuesday. We don't play again until Friday, so Wednesday, let's compete against each other in battle day. Let's hit the weight room, and then Thursday, come back. Okay, now we're gonna put some stuff in and get ready for Friday's opponent.
Dan Miller is entering his second season as the boys basketball head coach at San Marcos High School in Texas. He was previously the head men's basketball coach at Letourneau University in Longview, Texas for 7 years. Miller guided Letourneau to 3 20-win seasons and 2 NCAA Division III tournaments, while compiling an overall record of 110-64. Miller also spent time as a college assistant and as a head high school basketball coach at Seven Lakes High School in Katy, Texas. After a stint as an assistant at the University of Southwest Minnesota in 2003-2004, Miller built the program from scratch at Seven Lakes. In his 9 years with the Spartans, he posted a 218-70 overall record, winning 4 district titles, 3 30-plus win seasons, 2 regional appearances, and 7 straight playoff appearances. Grab a notepad before you listen to this episode with Dan Miller, head boys basketball coach at San Marcos High School in the state of Texas. Hey, Hoopheads, sign up today for the Summer of Better virtual basketball camp with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. And remember, you can get up to $2,000 off on any trade-in. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Sean McDonald, boys varsity basketball coach at University School in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly. Mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Grab a notepad before you listen to this episode with Dan Miller, head boys basketball coach at San Marcos High School in the state of Texas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to be joined by Dan Miller, the head boys basketball coach at St. Marcos High School in the state of Texas, former head coach at Letourneau University, a Division III school, and host of the Basketball and Brew podcast. Dan, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited to talk some hoops tonight with you guys.
Absolutely. Thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into your story. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got in the game of basketball when you were younger.
Yeah, you bet. You know, I was fortunate to grow up in Wisconsin at a time that we had some great coaches coaching small colleges. We had Dick Bennett at Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And I went to his basketball camps. We had Bo Ryan winning national championships at Platteville. And I attended those basketball camps You know, at a young age, I was fortunate my parents brought me out there and just fell in love with the game at an early age. You know, I was one of those guys, honestly, a lot of people go to college, they don't know what the heck they're going to do with their lives and change majors a few times. And that's great, you know, and then they find themselves, you know, I'll just be honest. I was one who just really knew I wanted to do something with basketball all my life from a young age. So, you know, I was fortunate to have a great high school coach who's in the Wisconsin Hall of Fame, Pete Kittle, who coached basketball. His first year there at the school I'm from is called Brilliant, Wisconsin. It's right outside of Green Bay, about 25 minutes. And just had a great high school coach, fell in love with the game, and just really been a hoops junkie all my life and knew I had to do something with basketball. And then I ended up getting into coaching.
When did it become clear that it was going to be coaching and maybe not something else
right
in the game?
Right. You know, like everybody, you know, you when you're playing, you know, you think you're going to be in the NBA or play at a high level college basketball. And it hits you when it hit me probably when I went to those basketball camps and, you know, we were playing against kids from Milwaukee, Chicago. And you see, you know, this is why these guys are going D1. And, you know, maybe at best I was going to be a D3 player, but I just made the most of high school, honestly, and had a really enjoyable high school career. We didn't have great teams, you know, never went to state or anything like that, but we had good teams, lifelong friends from those teams, you know, a coaching mentor. And then, you know, I played 1 year of community college ball in Rochester, Minnesota, and I had a great year there, you know, and learned things. You know, I met my wife and I met at freshman orientation and we've been together ever since. So I don't say the word blame that I got out of basketball because of my wife. I'm lucky to have, because it all worked out. I just switched gears and kind of went into education. Teaching was my major and just knew I wanted to be a teacher and coach, but I wanted to be a head college coach and, you know, and just kind of keep moving up in the business. But, you know, I'm sure we'll talk later, but, you know, God brings us on different journeys and here I am back in high school, but got a taste of both already in my coaching career and just absolutely love the game and love what I do.
When you first started, did you think high school was where you wanted to go or did you think college right out of the gate? What was your thought process? Obviously, sometimes you get in a situation where one or the other presents itself, but what were you thinking as you were graduating?
You know, I was thinking high school at first, you know, and honestly, it's a lot to do with my high school coach because I just had a great high school coach, you know, Pete Kittle, who's now retired, but he ended up as, you know, small towns are different. So, you know, here we're at 6A high school, big high school in Texas. So if you're a head coach, you're doing one sport. Well, our coach, you know, he ended up being, after I left, the head football coach, head basketball coach. He won state championships in both, actually, because it's a small town. He did a great job after I left. But really, you know, he just was a great role model. And I'm real fortunate to play for someone like him who really was ahead of his time as far as I was concerned and relationship driven, teaching you how to be a student of the game. So I wanted to, you know, be very similar to him and run a high school basketball program. But I also, to be honest with you, I also had my eyes on college just because at a young age, like I mentioned, I was inspired by Dick Bennett, you know, who's Tony Bennett's dad, and then seeing Tony go on to have success, you know, in coaching. So I definitely wanted to get to that college level. And I was very fortunate to be able to do so and run our own program at Laterno.
What's something that you take from your high school coach that still is a part of your coaching today or that still influences how you approach coaching?
The thing that still stands out to me is he cared about us as people first and basketball players second. And never did he, you know, diminish how hard we need to work on the court and put time in. But Coach Kittle was somebody who really, really cared about you. And I wasn't the best student. You know, I was a good student. You know, I was very fortunate to, my wife was a very good student. So our three kids, you know, all grew up excellent and, you know, salutatorian type students, you know, but, I always wasn't. And Coach Kittle sometimes would bring me in after school and he said, "Hey, I know you want to talk basketball," because I would stop by his math class. He'd be like, "Before we do, you know, let's look at some things in the math class. Let's look at your grades. Let's look at these." So just things like that I always took. And as a coach, you know, That's probably the one thing I pride myself on the most is, and we've done some great things on the court, you know, fortunate to have good players like anybody, any good coach, you got good players, good assistant coaches, you know, but honestly, the saying, and you've heard this, I know, you know, is tell me about your team coach. I'll tell you in 20 years how these guys become men. And that's something that Coach Kittle displayed and role modeled for me. And so I'd say that as much as anything is something that I took away. The other thing I will say is what Coach Kittle always said, and I can't, to be honest with you, I can't remember exactly, you know, everything about our offense maybe that we ran, but one thing I do remember is we were going to play a hard man-to-man defense. And, you know, when you're in the state of Wisconsin, you have Dick Bennett, you know, up the road, and you have Bo Ryan, you know, in your state coaching, teaching man-to-man principles. And I still think that Dick Bennett old VHS tape with chalkboard, you know, X and O's, man-to-man defense is probably the best defensive tape you can watch. Even to this day, it still stands the test of time about how to play on the line, up the line, man-to-man defense. We were going to play hard defense when I was in high school. And that's something I take away and try to install into our teams wherever I'm coaching now.
Throughout your career, you've had an opportunity both to be a head coach at different levels, at the high school level, at the college level, and you've also been an assistant. Maybe talk a little bit about what you learned during your experiences as an assistant that helped you when you got your first head coaching job, or maybe something that, again, that you're carrying over from your assistant days that gave you more empathy for what a head coach has to do.
Yeah, you know, and one thing about when you are an assistant, and you kind of think that you're always ready. You know, I'm ready to take over a program at a young age. You know, when I came out, I was assistant down in the Houston area at a high school down there called May Creek. You know, in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm just ready to take over a program. When you eventually become a head coach, you have a little bit more appreciation. You know, I don't think this statistics are true, but maybe at the high division one, sometimes, you know, 80-90% of a head coach's time isn't really on the X's and O's. It's all the different things that goes into head coaching. You know, there's probably some statistic, you know, that's closer to reality with that. But the point of it is that you have so much to do as a head coach. So one thing I did try to do is soak in everything. You know, some good, some bad, you know, that you see from head coaches. And one thing I tried to pay attention to early, and I learned this again from my high school coach, Pete Kittles, he always said, be a student of the game. So I would always look at back when I was an assistant, both in high school and when I was assistant in college at Southwest Minnesota State. And we got a chance to play against Don Meyer's team when he was the head coach at Northern State. You watch the other teams too. So you learn from your head coach what to do, maybe things you might do different. But I always tried to pay attention to the great programs that we played and see what they were doing. You know, maybe have one eye down there and see what their warm-up looked like, how they got off the bus, you know, how they prepared for scouting calls when we would be running our offense, and try to pick people's brains as much as possible. So, you know, being an assistant, you definitely are a learning all the time. Just like when you're a head coach, you're a learner. I've been a head coach, I don't know how many years, maybe 18, somewhere around there, but I'm still learning. Like Coach K says, we're all lifelong learners. But those were definitely some things I took away as assistant. And, you know, one thing I said too is whenever I was going to be a head coach, and I was fortunate, I think at the age of 29, I got my first head coaching job at Seven Lakes in Katy, starting a big school, a big program. But I was fortunate enough to understand the importance of treating your staff, you know, and having that respect for each other on a staff. You know, loyalty, that's an extremely important word, but also just respect for each other and having fun working together. Because, you know, I think at the end of the day, our why is, yes, it's the kids and making sure we help grow them and care about them. But our why is also we love the game. So we don't want to go to work and be miserable every day. So I try to install that, you know, once I became a head coach, is have some fun. And the coaches that I was an assistant and our head coaches, they did make sure we had some fun. So that was something I took away from them.
As you're going about learning from the different places and people that you've been, do you have a system for writing things down, cataloging things that you've learned? Do you put it in a notebook? Do you use the computer? Are you one of the new techie guys with the phone and you got the app? How do you go about keeping track of some of the things that you pick up from the various coaches and things that you see?
Right. So I love the game so much, and I'm a little OCD about making sure that if I hear something, I write it down. So I have various ways, and so something I've been doing a long time is I just started doing it. I don't even know how many years ago, but my wife jokes about all our binders we have around the house. But is I keep a binder, and when we're watching games or we're watching listening to a podcast, maybe one of yours that you have a guest on, you know, just taking notes and just constantly taking notes. So then a few years ago, I had all these binders, and it was kind of a fun. Well, it actually was a COVID project of mine. I transferred them to an Excel sheet. And so I have an Excel sheet just called Basketball Notes that has tabs underneath it. And so it's a catalog of notes, and that stuff in those notes isn't my stuff necessarily. It's stuff I picked up on a podcast. It might be something that we picked up just watching an NBA game, stopping, rewinding, putting in an entry, just different things, you know, that I catalog in those notes. And then going along with the spreadsheets is then I have my own spreadsheet. So now it's a San Marcos spreadsheet. When I was at Laterno, it was a Laterno spreadsheet, and at Seven Lakes, it was a Seven Lakes spreadsheet where we have tabs on the bottom. You know, the first tab is going to be, you know, drills, all our drills. Second tab is going to be offense, you know. So I definitely try to be organized as I can. I wouldn't call myself a techie. Fortunately, I had a great one of those with me as assistant coach at Laterno and do here. But I do enough for sure on the computer to make sure we're staying up to date on everything and keeping things organized. Because it is tough, you know, when you listen to a podcast, you know, when I'm jogging, I keep phone notes also just in my notes. So I'm jogging, listen to one of your podcasts, listen to Basketball Immersion, you know, so I slap the glass. But whatever, and I hear something, I will, you know, start putting them into my notes. And sometimes I think I might have ran into a tree or two because I'm looking at my phone. But I do catalog because I don't want to try to, you know, hear something and then not remember it and get back to it. And there are some things I miss, but I try to have as much as possible. And then my wife, she's a big reader of books because she's an English teacher. And, you know, she'll be reading before we go to bed. She's reading this novel and I'm just reading an Excel sheet. And she's like, what are you reading? Are you still reading your basketball notes with a highlighter? I'm such a basketball nerd, but I'm like, yeah, I got to. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't retain it if I don't read it, say it out loud and that. But I love it. I love being a student of the game.
You have to have a system, I think, for recording things. Otherwise, it's really easy for stuff to get away from you. I know when I'm reading, if I read a book and I don't have a notebook handy, or sometimes I'll even go and I'll just read the book straight through and then go back to it and take notes and try to pick up things that can help me. If you don't have a system, it gets really, really difficult. You talked a little bit about that Excel spreadsheet. You talked about having, you know, your plays on a particular tab. How often do you go back through your plays, the things that you have, or your drills, the things that you're putting together on that Excel sheet, and sort of evaluate, hey, what do I have, or the things that I can take out, or the things that I need to add to it? Because I'm assuming that you have an Excel spreadsheet that's at the ready. In other words, one that's very current that, hey, this is what we're doing right now. So how often do you kind of go through that and look at it and say, okay, we need to take some things out, we need to add some things? Just what's the process there?
Absolutely. You know, so we spend a lot of time when the season's done from that day, you know, to after you take it. You always have to take a little time off, you know, away from the game, although it's hard because, you know, we get done now that I'm back in high school, especially it's hard because you get done and it's March Madness. So you're constantly watching and writing down and want to put things in. But once we start back up, you know, in the spring, I get that thing out, honestly, almost daily and just look at it, especially if we pick something new up. But right now, that's actually what I'm just finishing up, and it's just fun. I enjoy it, but I spend a lot of time in the summer and honestly, one of the things too is subtraction is such an important thing, is getting rid of some things. And I've been guilty of this, especially when I was a younger head coach, of trying too much. You know, you go to these clinics and you see all these great drills and you see, you know, all these different actions. You know, you can watch Chicago action. You can, you know, watch pistol action, all these things, and you get excited and you want to put them in and you can't wait to do it. But then all of a sudden you look and it's too much. So honestly, our drill sheet, you know, there's things I'm like, okay, what's the why on every drill I go through? What's the why? Why are we doing alley drill when we can do ball handling a different way? You know, and sometimes it takes, you know, 5 minutes to teach this drill when we can do the same thing, get it accomplished in a different way. We don't need five ways to do this skill. So we do go through those, look at the why, and, you know, we just kind of finished up, and I'm excited because we have some new drills coming in. Simplified things. We made a shooting chart, which I'm excited about. We sent it to our guys yesterday and they're already started. We got a couple of shooting records, but we said we put 8 3-point drills. This is what you need. You know, we have spot shooting, we have shooting on the move, we have some shooting off the bounce, but most of it is, you know, on the move, catching that drive and kick. But here are the 8 shooting drills from threes we're going to do that you can do in your individual or small group workouts. And then we have 2 team 3-point shooting drills, and that's 10. And that's how we're shooting threes. Let's get a lot of them off. So I looked through it. We had like 30 shooting drills. That's just too many. So, you know, I do, going back to your question though, I look at it a lot and go through it a lot, just like we have our depth chart. And, you know, at the high school level here, we have a varsity, a JV, and 2 freshman teams. So we keep that thing, you know, on a separate spreadsheet. But, you know, we go on that a lot. And college coaches, of course they do, because it's, especially with the transfer portal and the way things are going there, that's a 365-day roster building thing that you do. In high school, it's not maybe as much, but you're still looking at it and moving pieces on that depth chart.
When you're putting together your drills and you're looking at a particular season, do you have a core set of drills that you do pretty much every practice? Like, let's say for your first 15 minutes, we're going to go through this set of drills. Do you like to mix up the entire practice plan day by day? How do you, which kind of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and there's, I truly believe there's not a right and a wrong. You have to be you, but you have to also know your team, know your audience on how you want to do things. You know, there are some coaches who will have the same format and just plug in some different drills to accomplish that all year long. And that's the way they do things, and that's great. There are other coaches, you know, who are going to just mix it up all the time. You know, today they may start with shell drill, and then tomorrow they may start with skills. We try to be consistent with a core part of our practice, but we also do mix up some things. One thing we have is what we call our battle practice, and I can talk on it if you want in a little bit, but the battle practice is in there once a week where we go through this list, and we change the list a little bit, but we compete, divide the team. If it's our college team, divide them into 3 teams. High school, we might, our varsity and JVs together, divide them up, and then they stay on that team and they go through all these drills and competitions. But a typical practice for us, we start with our B solid drills. We have 5 pillars of play, and our very first pillar of play is always protect the ball. You know, so we got to value the basketball. I think that's how you start offense. I don't care if you're fast, slow, flex, drive and kick. If you're turning the ball over a lot, you're not going to be a winning program. So we protect the ball. So every day we do some type of what we call B solid drill. It might be baseline pivot bounce pass. It might be our Spurs passing series. It might be a different type of passing, 4-corner passing, but just to get it moving, to get our mouths going, to be 2-handed, 2 feet, to start practice. And then from there, we get things moving up and down a little bit. But I am someone who, the more I've coached, is the more live play that we have. So I really believe, you know, Coach K says the best teacher of the game is live play. And so we do a lot of competitions in our practice, like everybody, but we do play 5-on-5 a lot. Different situations. Usually we let our situations happen organically. You know, I used to I had this big situation sheet, and that's one of our tabs, right? So, you know, 10 seconds left, down 2. You have to do those to make sure you get to those. But most of the time, we let our situations happen organically. You know, just, you know, we might 1 minute left, tie game, you know, their ball, everyone has 4 fouls, and just let it play out, or 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and those type of things. Start someone at the free throw line and play from there. So we mix it up a little bit during our practice, but our practices generally have a flow of skills, shooting, live play, defense, our small-sided games, live play, scrimmages, end with something fun, and make sure we get teaching in there, fun in there, and competition in there.
The process for putting together a practice plan when you're doing it at the college level versus when you're doing it at the high school level, the same, different, pretty similar, the amount of time you're spending on it, just maybe compare and contrast the two.
You know, honestly, for me, and this isn't obviously for everyone, so everyone's probably different. For me, it's the same. You know, the one thing that college college coaches don't teach, you know. So, you know, they have a time to really probably meet and have their staff in there and get ideas. And then the head coach eventually come up with the plan for the next day or how they do it. But they do recruit and they are very busy like everybody else. So, you know, it just depends. But for me, whether I was at Seven Lakes as the head coach there for 9 years or 7 years as the head coach at Laterno or now starting my second year at San Marcos, it really has been the same. We finished practice, meet in my office, get some assess from my assistant coaches, you know, assessment of, yeah, here are a few thoughts. And then some coaches like to plan it before they leave. I like to honestly sleep on it. The next morning, one of my favorite things to do would be get up, have a cup of coffee, prayers, and then boom, I'm on that computer designing that practice plan, printing out. It's on the desk. That's the first thing to start the day. And okay, let's do what we need to do today. And whatever time practices, everything's ready. But, you know, one thing, it kind of staying along that college versus high school is, you know, people get caught up in levels. And we always are telling our players, you know, don't get caught up in levels, you know, D1, D2, D3, you know, wherever you're being recruited, you know, it's a good place. It's college basketball. And that's the same for coaching. Whether you're coaching youth basketball, high school basketball, college basketball, there are great coaches all across the board. And some of the best coaches that I've coached against, you know, on staffs have been on the high school level. And then same with the Division III level. You know, we're Division III and you're coaching against Terry Butterfield at UT Dallas, or you're going up to Whitman and coaching against their staff. These coaches, it don't matter if they're D1, D2, or D3. They're Hall of Famers. I mean, they're great coaches. So, and that's kind of how I treat it. Wherever you are, you want to make it big time. So we try to do that and make sure these San Marcos players have that experience, get a great practice plan. And that's what we're doing when we're designing it.
It's a great point that you make, and it's one that I know we've talked about a lot here on the podcast when it comes to thinking about the levels. Not just typically, I think we think of that as for players, right? Where, hey, as a high school player, what level are you going to play at? And we all know that there's a huge focus on you got to be a Division I player because that's what everybody sees on TV and that's what everybody's familiar with. But there's such an opportunity for players at so many levels to find the right fit and to have a great experience at whatever school they end up going to at whatever level. And I think the same can be said, as you mentioned, for coaches, where that's one of the things that we've honestly enjoyed the most about this podcast is just the fact that we've gotten to talk to coaches at the high major level, and we've gotten to talk to coaches who are coaching at the youth level or coaching at the high school level. And the amount of insight that any one of them can provide, it has nothing to do with what level that coach is coaching at, because there's great coaches, as you said, at every level. And no matter where you go, you're going to find yourself challenged by the coach who's sitting on that other bench across from you. And there's no question, after talking to coaches for whatever we've been doing now 4.5 years, that the amount of knowledge out there at the game is just, it's incredible at every single level, no matter where you are. Let's go back in time to when you first got that job at Seven Lakes. I'm assuming that was a brand new school, brand new program. Yes. So not only are you getting, that's your first head coaching job, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So not only are you getting your first head coaching job, but you're not stepping into a situation where things are already in place, which I guess could be a good or a bad thing, because you kind of got to shape it in the way that your vision was. There was nothing for you to break down in order to be able to start over. So just talk a little bit about that experience, what you remember from, let's say, your first week or two on that job, and just kind of what you were feeling and what some of the things were that you had to do that maybe you didn't even realize, hey, I didn't even know I was going to have to do this.
Right. You know, if a coach is out there listening and you ever get a chance to open a program, high school, and be the very first coach, go for it. Because it is a great opportunity to really put, you know, we all talk about culture, establishing a culture, but it even goes beyond that, you know, just the brand. And, you know, I was really fortunate, you know, our athletic director, his name was Kevin O'Keefe. He passed away, so God rest his soul, but great man. He took a chance at me at 29, you know, some college assistant coaching experience, but no high school coaching experience. And there were a lot of very qualified people who wanted that job, but he took a chance. He must have saw something in me, but But what was exciting about that job of just starting was just building that culture and doing things right. Now, you are right. There was so much, right? So, you know, you order basketballs, but you also need a rack, you know, and, you know, figuring that out, like, what the hell are we going to do with these things, right? So, like, you know, I remember that mistake, but.
Hey, I can tell you what you do with them. You do what I do with basketball camp. You put them in hefty contractor bags. Those are the best, those are the best things I've found for hauling basketballs in and out of your car and through gym doors and everything else. They're cheap. They don't rip.
Hey, no, Mike.
What?
You get bags donated to you by the recreation.
I did get some bags donated to me this year, but I prefer the hefty contractor
bags.
Listen,
I got to tell you this, Dan. Yeah, there was these bags that Mike used. I swear, there was. I had to go like 7 years where he was using the same bags. It was pretty impressive. It was pretty impressive. And then I think there was one summer I was like, Mike, I think it's time to get new bags. I think
although I will say, in my own defense, I was mobile with the basketball. So I had to put them in and out of cars and drag them in and out of gyms. If I was in a gym, I would far much more prefer a ball rack. Let's put it that way.
And I will say, I think Mike's new plan is he tells them all to bring their own basketballs, and it actually works really, really well. He doesn't have to.
See, that's smart.
That was one of the best COVID learning experiences I ever had. Cause I was like, okay, I guess I can't bring camp balls. So let's just have everybody bring their own ball and see how that goes. And oh my gosh, now the cleanup of camp is so much easier than it ever was. The kids just bring their own ball and
they leave.
Camp ends are gone. I bring like one bag of balls for the kid who occasionally forgets and I'm done. So yeah, that was one of the positives of COVID for me. So
Dan, I told you I do every once in a while jump in. So
I'm just envisioning Mike looking like Santa Claus with that bag of basketballs over his shoulder.
Well, he did used to look like that, but then he started to get his children got older, they just started bringing them in for him.
So okay. I like it. Utilize them.
Got to put the family to work without question.
Yep.
Without
delegation.
Question.
That's
all right. So jump back to Seven Lakes.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff there. I just think, you know, that first year was just a blessing in that I had a great assistant coach, Matthew Brayton, who's now the head coach at Katie Taylor. So it was definitely a wee thing, you know, building Seven Lakes. And we were fortunate enough the next year to bring on Shannon Heston, who is the current coach at Seven Lakes, which I'm really proud of that he took over after I left. And then, you know, just establish a good staff with guys like Todd Kanabe and Wes Cole. And we built something at that school, you know, in basketball and got people excited. And one thing we did is we did it collaboratively as a staff, and we put up things that would be important. And one of the things that we saw in Houston that wasn't big back then was student sections. We went to basketball games and the year before, because we got hired and we kind of had like a little bit of year to figure things out. And, you know, so I got hired right about the playoff time and feeling like I was going to get the job. So when I went to the playoffs, I just wasn't too impressed with the student sections, especially being from Wisconsin, coming off coaching college basketball in Minnesota. So that was one of the things I wanted to make sure to do is build that student section up. And we took pride. We built up the Spartan Crazies. We had just excellent student sections. And that's probably one of the things that a lot of people, when they talk about Seven Lakes, we had some great teams, but they say right away, man, your student sections were great. We had these theme nights, packed gyms. It was just a great atmosphere, you know, but I definitely look back at my first time as a head coach. I did some things I'm proud of. I did some things, you know, that you look back that I definitely would have did different, you know, but I don't have any regrets. You know, I really don't. I'm really thankful. And, you know, the first thing is it always starts with your foundation and your foundation at home. So just having such a supportive wife and then young kids growing up always, you know, had some frustrated seasons or whatever, not losing seasons, but just early on, you know, where you wanted to just be a little bit higher than you were. But once we clicked and got rolling, man, it was a fun time. And, you know, I took everything that we had there at Seven Lakes and kind of felt like it would go one of two ways after we were one of the probably better programs in the Houston area. We never were able to get out of the regionals. We made it there a couple times and get to the state tournament. In Texas, it's very hard. You have to win 5 games to get out of Houston, basically. And it is hard. I mean, you're playing against some tough teams. We had some opportunities. We got there. I felt like we were eventually going to get out. But I said to my wife, I said, you know, could we stay here? I could do this forever. But I always have had this urge to go be a head college coach too. Well, I applied for a couple of years, didn't really get anything back. You know, I'm like, you know, we're being successful at a big high school in Texas, but you know how it goes with college coaching. You have to have that in. And my connections were a little bit more on the high school level. And anyway, it just happened to be that I ended up getting that Letourneau job, and it was tough to leave Seven Lakes. But one of my favorite things about leaving it was that my assistant coach took over. The assistants stayed there. They were able to carry on the Spartan way is what we called it. And I'm very proud of that. Just like when I left Letourneau, James Wallace stayed there, did a fabulous job this year. That's probably as much as from a coach to coach standpoint is like as much as the players have done great things. Just from a coaching standpoint, I'm really proud of that, what my assistant coaches have done.
All right, let's circle back before we get to sort of the process of that got you to Letourneau. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about how you put together that staff at Seven Lakes as a brand new coach,
right?
Brand new program. Where did you go? Were you talking to guys that you already knew? Were there people that were in the area that maybe you didn't know, but you knew their reputation? Did people recommend coaches to you? Just how'd you go about putting together that staff? Because obviously you put together some great people that were able to continue the program success even after you left. So what was your process there?
Right. And you hit it right on the head, Mike, is that the first thing was great people, because that's one thing that I wanted to establish was the right culture, you know, with our core values and the guys that we hired, you know, they fit them to a T. But the first one I got was Matthew Brayton. He was an assistant at Katy High School at the time, my age. I knew him a little bit just from working some basketball camps together. And he came on as my assistant coach, and it was just a great fit. And then another person I wanted to bring on, who was a middle school coach at the junior high at the time, Shannon Heston. You just knew he was an up-and-coming, a very good coach. I loved his energy. You know, I just thought it was great to bring this energy onto the staff, kind of a kid's magnet, you know, the kind of guy that just the kids are going to love. And sometimes, especially in my younger days, I was probably a little harder to play for than I am now. And I just thought he was a good balance to have on our staff. And then we were able to get Wes Cole, Todd Kanabe, just both really good teachers. That's what impressed me about both of them, honestly, is they can teach. They loved basketball. And then being able to hire them, I knew that would transfer to basketball. And Wes Cole is a future head coach down there. Todd Kanabe's now a principal down there. So we just had a heck of a staff. We even had some football coaches like Jason Sanders on our staff, you know, Charlie Arrow, went on to go coach and Charlie in college as an assistant football coach, and Jason moved up in the football ranks. So that was it right there. We had good players, good staff, and I'm really proud of that and how we worked. And it was much different now going from Seven Lakes. You'd think going to college, I'd have this big staff, but in Division III, you get one assistant. So you go from having this big 6A high school program, our school almost had 4,000 people, to a small private NCAA Division III. We had one person. So I had to hit it right on that one. And I did. And we worked together for 7 years when I got James Wallace there. I was thankful there.
What was the process for getting that job? How does it come to your attention that it's open?
Yeah.
What do you remember about the interview process? You mentioned before that you had reached out previously to mm-hmm. try to get some Division III, some coaching looks
yep.
at the college level. So why do you think this one panned out the way it did for you?
Right. So, you know, just kind of going back in time a little bit, you know, I had a few opportunities to join college jobs on staff as assistants, you know, but I didn't want to go be a Division I assistant, just to be honest. After having our own program at Seven Lakes and being a head coach, that was the path. I really enjoyed that. So my goal was at that time shifted. If I would get into college, I wanted to be a small college coach. So it was looked at a few, didn't get anything, you know, didn't really get much back, didn't get any interviews. So I knew this would work this way. So when I told my wife, staying in Katy, we love it, a suburb of Houston, I'm going to do Seven Lakes and we're going to just keep this thing rolling. Stay here. Our kids will graduate from here. So we put some money down on a new house. When we put money down on a new house, We're literally walking through the house and my phone dings and it's an email from Terry Dyke, the athletic director at Letourneau. And she got to my application and she said she wanted to do a phone interview. So, but she also told me once I did the phone interview, there were, you know, 150, 160 people that applied for this position and so on. So, you know, I didn't feel we would get it. So we didn't pull out of the house just yet, but next thing you know, she called me up there, brought me. Thankfully, we were able to get the money back on the house and we moved up there. But, you know, it just was the, honestly, it was the athletic director again in Terry Dyke who believed in me. Because not many college coaches are going to hire a head high school coach with a little bit, sure, assistant college coaching experience. But she took a chance on me because she felt the fit was right. And it was a rebuild job, you know, nothing against the previous staff because they were great people. But the reality was they were averaging 5 wins over, I think, maybe the previous 4 seasons. So, you know, it was, she told me it's going to take some time. I want someone who's going to build up a winning basketball program. So it was a really blessing for me because it was going to be tough. And that first year was tough. I'll tell you what, I mean, that was the toughest year of my life. And I think my wife's life, because our kids weren't necessarily loving the move. One was in high school and 2 were in junior high. We were losing. We lost that year. We won 5 games and it was just a tough year. But I knew if we did things right, kept believing, keep the faith, we would turn that corner. And sure enough, we did. So that was the process. And I'm just thankful to Coach Dyke that she saw what we did at Seven Lakes and thought we could do that also at Letourneau University.
When you first got there, was the key turning around the internal culture combined with bringing in better players? How would you balance those two in terms of what was more critical, at least in that first year or two? Obviously, eventually, both of those things are really important. You can't win big right. without either one of them. But just initially, which one did you think was more important?
Right, man, that is a great question. You know, because it really the answer is somewhere in the middle, but
right.
it's a great question because, you know, when I came there, you could feel a sense of just, I don't want to say the word failure in basketball, but just not winning. You know, they didn't know how to win in the daily things, but you also could feel that, you know, especially after going through that first year of playing in the league, we don't have the guys that can beat these top teams, you know, and, you know, sure, we can always coach better. And I felt like there were some things I didn't do a great job of that year. And so I'm definitely not putting it on the players. I'm putting it on myself also. But so it was a big learning curve for all of us, but we identified some people we wanted to get. And it was a unique situation because I had 2 targets and they both played for me at Seven Lakes. And I was thankful that we were able to get them both. Jeff Martin he transferred in from Murray State as a point guard because he walked on at Murray State, for 2 years. And then he came and was our point guard for 2 years. Culture changer, having him at Letourneau that second year. And then Alec Kohlhoff, who played at Seven Lakes, was just a great shooter. And he was just going to college, making 10 threes at Texas State intramurals. And I said, hey, I know you're enjoying that frat life, buddy, but we need you to come play Division III basketball. And he did. And, you know, those 2 guys, along with a lot of other players I could name, really helped turn that thing around and the culture. But man, that is a great question because it's a combination and of culture change, players change, you know, your growth as a coach, all those things and getting through year one. And, you know, it's just kind of like teachers now. I see a lot of turnover in teaching, you know, at least here in Texas. I think it's kind of hit some other states too, but I think a lot of it too has to do with, you know, these, they come out of college and they go 1 or 2 years and it's tough and they want to give up and their friends making maybe a little bit more money in the business world and they leave teaching. But I feel like if you can get through those first couple of years, you're going to see the rewards of helping kids every single day as a teacher and those lifelong rewards. And that was the same at Letourneau. We had to stick through it. We had to get through it. James and I did, along with the players that stayed, and we flipped that thing and it was so fun doing it.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. So when you started recruiting and you're thinking about changing the culture and upgrading the talent level, what were some of the intangibles that you looked for in players, whether it was through conversations with the players and their families, maybe with their high school coach? Just what were some of the things that, obviously there was a level of talent that you wanted to bring in on the basketball floor, but what were some of the characteristics that were important to you that you felt like, man, if the guys I'm bringing in have these things, that's going to enable us to turn it around?
Yeah, you know, another great question. The first one, honestly, is toughness. We just needed some tough guys that are going to defend, you know, at a high level and rebound and take coaching and just, you know, grind it out and trust this process. So we really looked for some tough guys. And, you know, that first year, I mean, we were recruiting so hard. We were, you know, and honestly, it's a tough balance because in Division III, you can recruit 365, unlike D1 and D2. So you don't have the budget for it. So that first year, I think I spent a lot of our own money because I, you know, I was like, we are going to recruit. So we would practice and we would go out as much as possible. And James and I were in Dallas. We were in Austin. We were in Houston and we were looking for guys. The other thing about it is it's a little different in that we brought in a big recruiting class. You know, we had big numbers. We actually had a number that we had to get to from our AD on our team, which was something I negotiated down because I felt like it was, we had way too many. When I got there that first year, we had 24 because I didn't have the recruiting class when I got hired. It was hired early summer. So we had 24 players and then in walks a kid. And I said, you know, we're checking people the first day of moving. And okay, I got 24 here. And then another kid comes down the hall. I just remember looking at James, we have 25 dang people on our pass. How are we going to get these guys to gel, to mesh? I think we had 15 were point guards, you know? So like it was that first year was, so we had to have a plan, you know? So we, you know, not that positions are maybe so important, but we said, We have to bring in a point guard and a heck of a backup point guard. So we targeted Jeff. We have to bring in guys who can shoot the ball and we have to bring in bigs. And at D3, when we say bigs, we're looking at 6'4", 6'5", tough guys. You know, if you're 6'9", 6'10", and can play, chances are you're playing scholarship basketball. So, you know, we look for those 6'4", 6'5", tough guys like Christian Seidel and Caleb Loggins that we were able to get. And those guys were just tough guys that fit that characteristic I was talking about. So it was fun. You know, I say fun. It was a tough year and that part was tough, the losing, but it also was fun knowing that we were building our roster and we had to have some tough talks, you know, with guys. But, you know, one thing is I pride myself on being honest, you know, being honest with players. I always have. I said, you can, you know, talk to me at practice, before practice. I don't shy away from it. You know, where do I stand on the depth chart? What do I need to work on? You know, you may not always agree, but I'm going to tell you, you know, right now I see you as the backup, maybe the backup to the backup, but this is what you can do. I also want to give you an action plan, but I want to be honest. So there's no surprises when we get to game day. That's just crazy. You know, when kids are surprised if they don't play. But so going back to it, we had to identify our roster, identify our needs, like you said, and we were fortunate to get some players who were able to flip it pretty quick. But now in that second year, it was crazy because that first year or that second year, I think we got beat on about 3 buzzer beaters in our first 6 games. So now we start out like 2-5 that second year. We're playing 3 freshmen, but you know, we're right there, but we're still losing, you know, and I remember my wife just saying, you know, she was on her knees, you know, in the closet praying, you know, is Dan going to be okay? Help me. But boy, after that, we got on a roll. We did some things like we won at Mary Hart and Baylor for the first time in school history. You know, we got some sweeps on the road, which hadn't happened in years at Letourneau, you know, and then we did some things, you know, when we got into that conference tournament that second year, the third year, we were hosting the conference tournament with the best record in the AFC. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Was there one particular moment where it turned that you can remember? Can you pinpoint like a specific, mm-hmm. oh, when this happened,
yes.
I knew we had things.
Yes, I absolutely can. We were at Mary Hart and Baylor, and that was what I refer to as winning on the road. The year before, the first year, I'm not a math major, but like I couldn't even come up with the number that we lost by at their place that first year because it was high, and they just spanked us so bad. So that second year, we returned to Mary Hart and Baylor with this new young team. And they had, our school had never won there. And we went toe to toe, possession for possession, great game. And we ended up pulling out the game in a close game at the end. And I just remember looking at James, my assistant, and just saying, we're doing this. We have these guys and they're young. These guys get it. And it was fun. And that was that moment. So I actually can. And that's a great question. I can look back and remember that.
When you think about the totality of your run there, if you had to pinpoint one or two things that really directed your success, that led to the type of program that you were able to build, what would those one or two things be?
Yeah, you know, I think if it's from an X's and O's standpoint, it was the way we played offense. We played at a fast pace. 1 year, we averaged 94 points per game, I think. It was maybe year four, but we consistently averaged 87 or above. And we have a team in our conference. When I was at Letourneau, we had a team, Concordia, coached by Stan Bonowitz, great coach, good friend of mine, who plays trapping, full court press, you know, a fast pace, led the league in scoring maybe 7-8 straight years or something before we did take over that title. And I think we led it 3 years. So it was that pace. It was nothing like all of us coaches. There wasn't anything that I invented. I studied, a lot of Notre Dame's concepts, you know, and brought them to us, but maybe did them, tried to get our guys to do them at a faster pace, you know, get the ball up the court in the scoring zone and look to get things in the fast break. And then I do think we were, you know, a little bit ahead of it, you know, in our league, at least, of flowing and not calling sets and plays, you know, of just giving the guys that freedom and, you know, off what we did in practice with our skill development, our 3-on-0 and playing with trust and telling our guys we believe in them. You know, you shoot the ball because we believe in them. And they did. They were, I think we were a high scoring offense. We had some great players, when we got Nate West, who became National Player of the Year, for example. But I would say from a basketball standpoint, that was it. But then the second thing, and this is probably something that we had at Seven Lakes and we had at Letourneau, and I feel it now, especially in year two here at San Marcos, is the connectivity. The guys just being connected and really understanding the word brotherhood in basketball, you know, teamwork, you know, just however you want to say, getting that synergy, being unselfish. You know, we would do things, you know, like watch film and pause it. You know, some, you know, buzzword might be a culture clip, but we would look at our bench and just see every single player standing up and cheering. And, you know, that's what we had at Letourneau. That's what we had at Seven Lakes. And that's what we have here at San Marcos. Guys not only loving their role, but starring in their role. And I would say that's the second thing that I would point to. So maybe that fast paced offense, but then that's for sure that connectivity on our teams.
I'm sure that the fast pace helps you in the recruiting process when you're talking to players, right? And saying, hey, we're going to get up and down, we're going to get shots up, and we're going to run. Most players, I think, would probably prefer to play that way as opposed to the grind it out, maybe old school style of basketball. So I'm sure that certainly was a factor. And then you start talking about that connectivity piece and the culture and just building a team where guys are together and they're rooting for each other's success. How do you go about doing that? And is the process different at the college level versus the high school level? Because it's kind of interesting at the Division III, right? You've got much more contact with them during the season.
Right.
But yet once the season ends,
yeah,
then you're kind of done and you can't do anything with them again until the next season rolls around. Man. Versus high school,
yep,
obviously they have more demands on their time. You're teaching, they're going to class, and they have homework, and they're living at home and families and all the other things that go along with that. But then you do have more access to them in the off season in terms of player development and building those relationships. So just maybe talk a little bit about how you go about building that connectivity, both how you did it in college and how you do it in high school.
Yes. And you know, you're spot on. One of the things about coaching Division III that is frustrating is as far as on-court coaching, you know, as of now, and I know they're working on maybe making some tweaks, but it starts October 15th and it basically goes to your last game. And then, you know, you're done coaching them in basketball from that, whenever your season ends, you know, mid-February, if you're fortunate enough to make it to March, until October 15th. So, you know, what we would do at Letourneau then is we would still utilize team, what we call team time. You know, it might be something like doing community service together, you know, coming out to my house for a cookout in the backyard and, you know, having a little video game tournament or something, you know. So we did as many things as we could, you know, off the court during our off season. Of course, we could set up open gyms and get those guys going. And generational leadership in good and great Division III programs is just the key. Because once you have those leaders that will teach the young guys, so when the coaches have to step away in February or March, that they can keep it going. So they can do small group workouts or have open gyms that are quality open gyms. And that was the key. And so, you know, as good as James and I maybe did as coaches, part of that growth into the great program that we have at Letourneau, and they still have, is that generational leadership with the Jeff Martins and the Alec Kohlhoffs and the Nate West and Justin Moores, who were continuing to coach those guys, peer teach when we would step away. So that connectivity. And then I go back to just being honest, you know, with the roles of just really in the recruiting process. You know, we would sometimes, and sometimes I think James would look at me and think I was a little crazy when I would sit in that conference room with the parents and the kids and just tell them, like, look, I don't know if you're going to get in the game as a freshman. We value you. We love you. But right now we have 8 guys in that gym that are playing open gym that are really dang good. But like, if you can fight and grow and go through it, maybe as a sophomore, you'll be in our rotation. It was rarely that we promised anything. There were a few guys that we just knew, you know, we knew Justin Moore would come in and play. But my point is just being honest, and it wasn't for everybody. There would be people who would drive back to Houston and say, forget that. I want to go somewhere, you know, where coaches tell me I'm going to play. Right. But the guys who did come, you know, so it wasn't a surprise when they were fighting for their spot and maybe didn't get it. And were the guys up cheering on the bench and going and fighting for their time. So I would say that's part of it. High school is a little bit different with, you know, you have multiple teams. So like, you know, you're a gatekeeper of 4 teams as a head coach, right? So, you know, you have that roster building and that generational leadership sometimes looks like we have a great senior class coming back to San Marcos. You know, we're really blessed, but it's fun when I see those guys. You know, we just had a incoming freshman basketball camp last week and our whole varsity team, you know, stayed and we're teaching these incoming freshmen, and you could see the excitement when things clicked with these freshmen. So, you know, you can see that connectivity start. So once again, if you get your leaders really loving it, buying in, you know, your leadership circle on your teams or in your program or having fun, you know, as a coach, you don't have to do much else after that. Just keep them organized and get them in the right spots.
When you finish at Letourneau, what's the thought process behind leaving there where you had built a successful program at the college level to come back to San Marcos and pick up again as a high school coach? Just walk us through the decision process, which I'm assuming involved your wife and lots of conversations and discussions. Just tell us a little bit about that process.
Right. These are great questions. You know, the thing with that is there are a lot of people this past year, that was probably the number one question people asked, because, you know, usually when people leave a college program, they're either retiring, get fired, or are moving up. And I did none of the three. You know, we had a very good team. In fact, we had a great team coming back, which made it actually surprisingly a little more easy to leave, knowing that my assistant would get that job. But we, just knew, my wife and I, that it was time for a change. You know, we had been there 7 years. We had been through, you know, just a lot of stuff, you know, in life in 7 years, you know, just things that go on. And we just knew that we needed to take our family to a new place. And it wasn't maybe like we left because of family. We wanted to live somewhere that we enjoy so much. And we love Austin, Texas. Ever since we've been to Texas, we love Austin. And San Marcos is 30 minutes south of Austin. It's a river city. It's a beautiful city. So I wasn't looking, but my youngest son was going to be a freshman in college, which he was this past year. So my wife and I were going to be empty nesters. We just got done with COVID, you know, and you go through a lot of thinking and stuff with COVID. And so my thought process was we could try to go, you know, up and get a Division II job, which, you know, we might have been able to get. There's no doubt about that. It, you know, I had some interest and some athletic directors talked to me about those jobs over the last couple of years when I was at Letourneau. But we didn't want to go live in a small town somewhere in a different state. We love Texas. We love Austin. And I loved my time back at Seven Lakes when I was a head coach there. So, you know, make a long story short, I guess I'm kind of babbling about it. But basically, we just knew it was time. And when we heard San Marcos was open, I talked to the athletic director, who was a very successful football coach at Denton Guyer, John Walsh. His son was a quarterback at Oklahoma State for 3 years. He left Denton Guyer to come here the year before. So that told me he sees something in San Marcos from an athletic standpoint. And then when he talked to me on the phone and the principal, who I love, Denisha Presley, she and Coach Walsh offered me this job. You know, it just felt right. And Monica and I just had to come see the city in person, of course, together. And she fell in love with it. And then another great blessing is she teaches English. So for the first time ever, we're on the same campus, which can be good, can be bad, right? Husband, wife on the same campus. But no, we actually love it. We love work. We drive to work. It's staff development right now. Come on, somebody. But we drive to work together today and drive home together.
What were some of the questions that you had for the administration there at San Marcos before you decided to take the job? What were some things that you wanted to make sure were in place that you felt were critical to being able to build the kind of high school program that you wanted to build?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. So this is kind of wild. You know, we were really just looking to go move to the Austin area when we decided this is the area we wanted to target. I said I didn't want to have a small school job. To be honest, I wanted to have the 6A high school level in Texas is a great level. You know, it's high level basketball, and you know, you get your athletic period every day and can work with the guys in the summer. So I just wanted to see what was open. But once the only job that I knew, a friend told me San Marcos was open, I just wanted to make sure we had the right leaders in place from an athletic director standpoint, which was definitely a check with Coach Walsh, and then administration with our superintendent, who's awesome, and our principal. And you could just feel from Dr. Cardona, our superintendent's message, that this place here in San Marcos, this suburb, this river city, is a sleeping giant in all things. And it can be a great place. So that was it. And a lot of people say, you know, because we have a two Division I guys who are seniors, one's committed to Texas State, and then we have another high major player in Malik. And, you know, like, I bet you kind of really went back because you have those players. And this is my honest truth is I didn't even know when I talked to Coach Walsh that those guys were here and they were going to be juniors. I didn't even really know. I just looked at Max Preps. I saw they didn't win. You know, when those guys were sophomores, it was COVID year, but they had a losing record, didn't make the playoffs. So I thought, hey, great, let's turn that program around. They got a good AD. And Coach Walsh just told me on the phone, he said, hey, you're going to have some good ones. Now, it doesn't take long, a couple clicks on the internet, to say, oh, God, we're going to have some good ones. And we sure do, because they are some great, not only players, there's great young men. But so that was really it. And it's fun. But, you know, we had to take a team here. It was opposite of Seven Lakes, where they had zero record. You know, they never played a game before. In the past, they hadn't made the playoffs here in a couple of years now. So now you're going back in and kind of going back to your first question about players, culture, which one's important. Well, here we were blessed. We had the players. We had to change the culture. And we had to get the culture to understand the process of basketball. Because what we had is a lot of talented players here in San Marcos, but they didn't necessarily, and it was nothing against the other staffs or anything like that. It's just, but they just needed to learn the process of winning and what that goes into and what a true brotherhood is all about. And once again, great assistant coaches and excellent players. So we're excited. We think we're going to have a really good team this year also.
Did you have individual meetings with players when you first got the job?
Yes, yes, I did. And in fact, those were great because I was able to go get down here in the spring and meet the team. And then I was able to get 3 weeks, which is kind of rare, where Coach Walsh, he, like I said, great athletic director, right? He was able to, because I wasn't at a previous school district, so I wasn't teaching class. So when I resigned from Laterno, you know, I was, you know, basically out of a job, you know, and they took care of me really good at Laterno, and my assistant coach got the job there. But he was able to bring me in. So I would travel down here and coach the guys for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I would go back to Laterno and help out there a little bit with the transition. So it was a really great, I think it was 4 weeks of that. A lot of driving, 5 hour drives, but, it was great getting to meet with those guys to kind of learn them a little bit, and then finish up moving, get here in that summer and then get the summer workouts going because we're fortunate to get 2 hours, you know, in the summer a day that we, Monday through Friday, that we can work out with these guys. So we go Monday through Thursday and then kind of get things going. And that was invaluable. It was really valuable meeting with those guys. And it wasn't overnight. There was some resistance to maybe some things. I don't want to say like outward resistance, but it takes a little time to really get them to understand, you know, how we need to do things. But boy, they're humming along now. And I'm excited where we're at, you know, on this date, August 11th.
You mentioned earlier about your battle practices. I know that's something that I'm sure coaches who are listening kind of have maybe questions or kind of piqued their interest. So tell us a little bit about what those look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we'll have our battle practices. And what we did at Seven Lakes, and then we did this past year at San Marcos. So just a little bit different in college. In college, we would have about 15 guys. So we would divide three teams of 15. So 1 year we had five seniors. So often it'd be the five seniors, it'd be the five freshmen, and mix up the sophomores and juniors. I even ordered black uniforms, practice uniforms for our battle practice. And so the seniors would wear, they liked those black ones. So they would wear the black Jordan uniforms. And then the other guys would flip the blue, flip the gold at Laterno. We had three teams and away we went. So what we do with our battle practices is it's very competitive, first of all. Like, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say sometimes I make the joke like, hey, if there's not blood, it wasn't a good battle practice, or if a jersey didn't get torn, right? Because we do have a rebounding component in there where it gets pretty physical. But so what we do is typically we come in like a typical practice. We stretch. We do just a little bit of skills. I mean, not long, because our drills, the why behind them isn't just to have a winner or loser. The skills are going to be a passing, a drill, a two-on-one drill, a shooting drill. You know, all the components of basketball are built in there. But then what we do is we award points. And so you have to have good managers to keep the score, or your assistant coach can keep the score. But what it is we have the practice plan. Okay. And we'll have our drills, you know, speed passing, turn to corner layups, Phoenix drill, 2-on-1 drill, shooting drills, cutthroat. We'll do 5-minute rebounding, Kentucky transition, you know, ball side help side. Then we'll do zone battles, 5-on-5, man battles, 5-on-5. And then we end with king of the court. And it almost never fails that the tiebreaker between the three teams is going to be free throws. So then we finish it with these pressure free throws, and we don't tell them the score. We put them all on the line. And then we'll say, I'll usually have my assistant coach. So if we're at Laterno, it'd be James, or maybe it'd be DeMarcus or Jimmy. Now they read off the scores. And sometimes I don't even know, because I'm coach. I have a good idea, but like sometimes I don't even know necessarily if it's really close. And they'll say, today, you know, this team, you know, is our winner of battle practice, and boom, they're off to the side. And then the other two in second place is, you know, the blue team in third place is the gold team. And we don't run, like, I'm not a big one in sprints anymore. You know, I understand what if coaches do that, that's fine. Just rarely we don't do our conditioning without basketball drills. The one time we do those at the end of battle practice. So the team that got third place will run like a deep six down and back. And then the other team runs a deep two or four. It's just more because they didn't win. And then we all come together. So it's competitive. It's fun. And we do the drills. We're live in it. And it's just to kind of crank up the intensity on each other. We're not putting a focus on scouting. We would do them on Wednesdays. So, in high school. So on Monday, you know, is a scouting practice and, you know, we go through things and now we're getting ready to play opponent on Tuesday. We don't play again until Friday. So Wednesday, let's compete against each other in battle day. Let's hit the weight room and then Thursday come back. Okay. Now we're going to put some stuff in and get ready for Friday's opponent.
How do you prepare for a particular opponent? How much film are you watching on the other team? And then how much of that work that you do on the film do you share with your team?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously in college you have synergy, you know, and it's just such a great thing. So you can definitely make the clips as however you want. So when we were at Laterno, you know, we would have team offense that we'd show them, team defense, you know, their main actions. And then we would be able to go into personnel, you know, show 5-6 clips on, you know, their starting point guard and so on. And, you know, so in high school, you don't have as much access, although with Huddle, such a great, and it just keeps getting better. So I hadn't been on Huddle in a while, being in college for the last 7 years. I've been on it a little bit, you know, but mostly dealing with synergy, which, you know, is great, but Huddle has come a long way and it's a lot better. And, you know, most coaches are sharing film. You know, one component we don't have in these districts down here. And finally, this district we do that we're going into this year, but is just having that automatic share. I just feel like, you know, it's kind of silly, you know, going three different loops to go get a film when we're all probably going to get it anyway, right? So right. Let's just dump it all in the same thing, you know, thing and just have it in there and have at it. But so to answer your question, how much, you know, we'll go over with the guys. It's a little bit trickier to clip out personnel clips in Huddle in high school than it was in college. But we'll sometimes, you know, watch a quarter of their game and then have clips on their main actions and then have clips on their defense. And that's something that I've improved on, you know, as a coach is really watching their defense more this in the past year here. And we're going to bring that out more this year, especially with the scoring ability we have on this team is how to attack them. How are they playing ball screens? You know, how are they playing, you know, dribble drives? Are they gapping? Are they denying? You know, what's the tagger doing? How can we move the tagger? So those are things that we'll do with our guys. And we're fortunate this year to have a very veteran team, year two of our staff being here too. So I think that we can get a little bit more in depth this year with film.
Now that makes sense. I think especially the more experience you have on a team, right, the probably the more they can handle when it comes to being able to understand. First of all, they have to have a grasp on what you're doing. I think that's right. always the number one piece is it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to spend a lot of time showing them the other team's offensive and defensive schemes if they don't have yours down. So if you have an experienced team, then that gives you that leg up and then you can start to focus maybe a little bit more on what the opponent does so you can counter that. As you start looking ahead towards the future and building the program, just tell us a little bit about your philosophy on building the youth program in your community. What does that look like for you and how you envision getting that organized and what have you already done to this point?
Yeah, you know, and you guys, first of all, I just want to say great job. All you do for youth basketball, you know, I love what you do and what you're all about because that's what it is all about is getting our youth excited about basketball and teaching them the right lessons, you know, on and off the court at an early age and getting them excited about basketball, especially now there's so much competition with sports and there's so much individualizing, you know, kids going straight soccer, football, tennis, golf, basketball, you know, we can't take it for granted that kids are just going to play basketball, you know, so we want to continue to get them excited about it. So I'm fortunate here. One of the other things that did appeal to me about this San Marcos job, and I do really love, it's a one horse town. You know, we're a suburb of Austin, so to speak, and we're about 30 miles south of Austin, but Everybody who's in San Marcos goes to San Marcos, unless they go to a private school, but there's not another public high school. So the kids at the elementaries, the kids at the high schools or junior highs, they're coming to our high school. And another cool thing that we have in place here is our two middle schools, they don't have mascots. They're not the rattlesnakes or the cobras. They're the rattlers, and that's what we are. And so they wear purple. You know, one's called Goodnight and one's Miller Middle School. Nothing to do with me. It was already called Miller, but they're the Rattlers. And, you know, there's that excitement right there. And so, you know, things we're doing is we're going down to their youth leagues. And this year I'd like to even get more involved, but we brought our players, you know, our best players were down there this year, helping teach, helping coach. We're down there. We ran a mini Rattlers program, brought the young kids in. And they could come up and we were coaching them and we want to continue that. Brought them all out for halftime of our game. And, you know, they were so cute. You know, it was hard to go in the locker room with our guys. I just wanted to watch them all get out there on the court. But then of course we're doing our basketball camps and going down to the middle schools. This year it'll work better with my athletic period to be able to get down there. Last year it kind of coincided with our varsity athletic period. So I couldn't get down there maybe as much. But this year I'm excited to get down there and once it's basketball season, get working with them. And no, that's it. You know, especially if you're going to be at a place and we plan on being here a while. I really, you know, we love San Marcos. So we want to build it up. And honestly, one of our championship standards is leave a place better than we found it. You know, and that's, you know, when you go in the, you know, Subway with your guys, and I know you do the same thing. You tell your kids, right? Let's leave it better than we came. Let's throw trash away. And if you see someone else trash, throw that away. But I believe so much in that also as a coach. Whenever we retire or we move for another job, you know, we want to leave that place better than when we came. So, you know, whenever the time to leave and someone to take over, that you have a program, not a team there, and it's just ready to for the next person to drive it.
That's good stuff. And it's so true that you want to make sure that when you're doing something, it can last, and that right. You're building something. You're not building it. You know, it's not a house of cards. It's something that, hey, when I leave here, somebody else, whether it's my assistant or somebody else that they bring in, can kind of keep things going. And obviously, no matter where you are, I think one of the things that sometimes we forget about is you've invested not just in your own high school varsity team, right? But you'll have invested in kids who are younger who maybe by the time right. You leave this job, they might not get to play for you. They might only be in seventh grade or eighth grade. And so you want those kids to be left with a foundation that the next person can come in and hopefully build upon it and have even greater success.
Exactly. Right. I agree 100%.
As we look forward here, I want to wrap up by asking you two final questions. So first question, or it's a two-parter. So the first part is, when you look at what you get to do day in and day out, what brings you the biggest joy? What brings you the most joy about what you get to do? And then the second part of it is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge there at San Marcos? So again, your biggest joy and your biggest challenge.
Right. Great questions. The joy, honestly, is just the day-to-day. You know, man, you know, sometimes it's true. You want to do something you love. And I absolutely love what we do. You know, my wife loves teaching and, you know, she loves being around kids and helping them with English and the mental health component and anything we can help kids with. That's what we're all about. And, you know, so getting to go to work and help those kids with that's probably my biggest joy. But also just watching them grow as basketball players also, because it is basketball and it's important and we love winning. You know, we don't shy away from winning. You know, it's, we want to be nice guys and we teach our guys to be good people but good people win also. And so really it's, you know, the joy is when we see the hard work pay off. Like last year, we ended up winning 27 games. I felt like we could have won more. We left too many out there, but we won 27 games. We made the playoffs. You know, it was a nice starting season. And there was some things that you were excited to see. These guys deserve to get in the playoffs. Now in year two, we obviously have some bigger goals and we have a team we believe that can really be special. But I would say my joy is not so much, you know, and I hope that joy will be, you know, in March, maybe when, you know, we're one of the last teams playing in the state, or if not the last team. But it goes beyond that. My joy is just today when Caden Gums, one of our players, texted me that he hit 59 in Miami shooting, which nice. Is a 5 minute, you know what I mean? Just in the suck. And these guys are putting the work in because they know what we do in August is going to determine if we're playing in March. So my joy is really just seeing these guys get that. And just doing it with my staff who are just great people, great friends. And it just brings me joy every day. The next question is honestly a pretty easy one just because of where we're at in San Marcos. We're building a culture and these first 2 years are great. But then behind that, just the depth of players, we're definitely going to have a big talent drop for a couple of years. It just is what it is. Good kids going to love the game. But it is what it is. We have two, probably really three Division I players on our team this year and a couple other guys in our senior class who might be able to play small college basketball. So that next year, we probably won't. We may have one or two guys, you know, for sure, two guys I think that can play college basketball, but not the high level Division I college. So with that, it's we talk about it on our board. You know, when we whiteboard things, we just throw things and we leave some things we leave up there. And, you know, like when we came in, we didn't really have any fundraising money. So we wanted to increase booster club money. So that stayed up there and just depth in our program stayed up there. Obviously we can't recruit. We do have open enrollment. So if people want to come and move into the River City right here, it's beautiful. And if it's basketball players, that's great. But if we have the people that are already here, we need to find ways to win with them. So it's finding ways with these younger kids to see what we're going to do this year, but help them along the way and not lose track of them when we're doing things with our varsity. Help our sub-varsities be great also. And then probably going to have to win a lot of close games in those next few years till we get, we have a class coming up, that incoming freshman, that'll be pretty special too. But it's just fun. But that is going to be our challenge, I would say, the depth part of it with the guys. Yeah,
got it. Makes sense. Dan, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. It's been a lot of fun. Before we get out, can you please share how people can follow your program? Tell them a little bit about your podcast, where they can find that. And after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Absolutely. And first of all, really appreciate you guys, you know, just having me on, Mike and Jason. You guys do a great podcast and you're awesome and you help grow the game. I hope you know that because it's a lot of work what you guys do, but you're growing the game and it's awesome. You know, I don't have any personal social media, but we have our basketball team, Rattler MBB at Twitter. Check us out. We have an exciting team. You know, I think that we're going to be a team that's going to be a lot of fun to watch and even follow on Twitter, as we post a lot of things on there at Rattler MBB. And then the podcast that we have, a podcast, Basketball and Brew, that we started, in late spring. And just, we just do it, every few weeks and have some coaches on there and just kind of talk and, you know, took a little page out of what you guys are doing and doing it down here. It's Basketball and Brew. They can come on and have a coffee or a brew, however they want, and just talk a little hoop. So yeah, that one is on Twitter at Basketball and Brew. And our YouTube page is Basketball and Brew also.
If you get a chance to listen to Dan's pod, make sure you do that. Highly recommend it. And Dan, again, thank you for jumping out with us. Good luck as you continue to build the program there at San Marcos. And I know you're going to do great things. You've been successful everywhere you've been, and I know that's going to continue. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.